You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Salam everyone, this is Yusuf. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Palestine Remembered. And in today's episode, it's going to be part two of the Palestinian passports / travel documents. Today I want to talk about, I spoke last week about the All Palestine government formed in Gaza towards the end of 48, and that they couldn't have a mandate on the people of West Bank because of the status quo started to unfold in West Bank with the remaining of the Jordanian army after the war and the subsequent annexation of West Bank to Jordan. So which means that they were only based in Gaza, and the remaining part of Palestine were either occupied under Israel or under Jordanian law in the West Bank, including Jerusalem. Not to mention the Palestinian refugees who started to develop communities by early 50s. We're talking about hundreds of thousands who live in Syria and Lebanon and Egypt and Iraq. So these different realities that the Palestinians started seeing themselves under meant that they did not get the same paperwork, the same passports. Now, if you want to ask about what happened to the Palestinians who remained, for the first 4 years, the Palestinians in Israel, in what later became Israel, were ignored. And in 1952, there was an Israeli law that allowed the Palestinians to acquire the Israeli citizenship. However, they remained under martial law. So there was a new hybrid and ugly reality that started unfolding against the Palestinians who remained in their homes. Some of the Zionists call them as the unfinished job. The numbers were around 135,000 Palestinians who live under Israeli law as of end of 1948 onwards. So for the first 3 years or 4 years, they were ignored, they were paperless, and in 52 they were eligible or allowed to acquire the Israeli citizenship, but they stayed under military law, which means that there were curfews, there were restriction of movement, there is confiscation of land, and there were also a long list of policies against their identity, their Arab identity, and they were separated from the other, the rest of the Palestinian society, whether in West Bank or Gaza inside Palestine, or those who became in Syria, Lebanon, Egypt and Jordan and Iraq. So they were not allowed to receive and send mail. They were not allowed to have any phone calls. And the only way of communication was through radio. So they were under martial law. Now, by the beginning of 50s, the Jordanian aspirations to annex West Bank became ready. First, in April 1949, there was a conference in Jericho where some Palestinians accepted the unity and called on King Abdullah the First of Jordan to be united under the leadership of the Jordanian king. And some Palestinians felt that they would be better off to be under a bigger pan-Arab political entity. Otherwise, Israel would swallow the rest of Palestine. But the majority of Palestinians didn't see that. They wanted independence. They wanted to be united with the other Palestinians in Gaza under the old Palestine government. But because of the geographical separation between West Bank and Gaza, and because of Israel that made sure that the Palestinians will be fragmented, and because of the general atmosphere in the Arab world, Britain was in favor of this separating West Bank from the future Palestinian state, and approved the annexation to Jordan. So that happened in April 49, that conference. But by April 1950, Jordan declared the annexation of West Bank and the Palestinians in West Bank, whether they are the people of West Bank originally or those who fled to West Bank from 1948 areas, were granted the Jordanian passports and they became full citizens of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. My grandfather, Yusuf al-Rimawi, I was named after him, acquired the Jordanian passport in early 50s, in 51, and his children, my father included, also were eligible for that Jordanian passport, and hence we became Jordanians, Jordanian citizens. Because we were in West Bank. We were originally from West Bank, and even those who were internally displaced inside West Bank were eligible for the Jordanian passports. In addition to those Palestinians who fled to Jordan in 1948. So we're talking about the population of Jordan before the annexation were about 400,000. And if you add to them nearly 500,000 overnight, they became Jordanians. And that created another reality that the citizens of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan were mostly of Palestinian origin. And there shouldn't be a problem whatsoever because eventually they were eligible to work and study and and acquire land and just full equality with their Jordanian counterparts. But the conflict, the geopolitics, the Cold War, and many other factors led to growing tension between the Palestinian movement and the political regime in Jordan. And unfortunately, they came head-to-head clash in 1970, which is referred to as Black September, referring to the events that happened in Jordan between PLO and the Jordanian government in September 1970. However, the Palestinians of Jordan remained citizens. The biggest blow to that was that in 1967, Israel occupied West Bank. So Jordan lost the land but kept the people, which means that it became a mix of opportunity and burden because the Palestinians were educated, but in the same time, the overpopulation, over limited or scarce resources has created a situation which is very tough for Jordan. So the Palestinians in West Bank became Jordanians. The Palestinians inside Israel remained paperless for 4 years, and then they acquired the Israeli passports in 52, but not citizens because they remained under martial law until 1966. And after the break, I'll talk about the Palestinians in the Arab countries. You're listening to Palestine Remembered on 855 AM. And the song is for the Lebanese icon, Fairouz.
Hi, this is Rafif Ziada, and you're listening to 3CR, Pro-Palestinian, Happily Proud Radio.
So let's talk about the Palestinians of Lebanon. As the first waves of the Palestinian refugees started to arrive to South Lebanon, the president of Lebanon, Bashar al-Khoury, the first president after the independence, went to the southern part, the southern city of Sur, and addressed the crowds, the Palestinian crowds, by saying, "Enter your country, Lebanon." His position towards the Palestinian refugees can be characterized by sympathy, support, welcome, generosity, and openness. And he also gave orders to all Lebanese departments to provide aid and support and to facilitate and to just be very supportive of the Palestinians who started to arrive from northern Palestine to south Lebanon until their return home. So the first phase of official reaction from the Lebanese government was sympathy and support, whereby the Lebanese President Bashar al-Khoury or the Prime Minister Riyad al-Sulh. However, nearly a year after that, and by the summer of 1949, the issue of demography started to emerge. The Palestinians, in their big numbers, are Muslims. Lebanon was built on a fragile equilibrium between the Muslims and Christians, particularly the Maronites and the Sunnis. And on top of that, you have the Druze. On top of that, you have the Shias. And on top of that, you have the other Christians. So because of fear of upsetting this equilibrium by accepting overnight or over a few months, I would say, a big group of people who are predominantly Muslims and Sunnis, the issue of demography, the issue of sect, the issue of xenophobia started to emerge. Not emerge among the Lebanese people, but started to emerge among the political elite in Lebanon. And according to a Palestinian writer in Lebanon, Akram Hindawi, he commented that the Palestinians were seen from a xenophobic point of view by the Lebanese political elite. The Christians saw the Palestinians as Muslims. The Shias saw the Palestinians as Sunnis. The Sunnis saw the Palestinians as Palestinians. And the three of them agreed on seeing them from a xenophobic point of view. And again, this is just the political elite, not the Lebanese people. The Lebanese people continued to embrace and to support and to live pretty much with peace and harmony. I don't want to romanticize everything because some problems did happen, but in general, it was a good solidarity between the two nations. It's also worth mentioning that some of the political elite in Lebanon refused to see the Palestinians from a purely demographic point of view, and instead they embraced the cause. They embraced the anti-Zionist spirit, and they embraced the project of liberation of Palestine. And some of these figures became the spearhead of the Palestinian-Lebanese resistance alliance, especially the Druzi leader Kamal Jumblat, who, in my opinion, cannot be reduced to being Druzi leader or just Druzi leader or a Lebanese leader. In fact, he in the eyes of... my father, who is a historian, calls him the Arab Gandhi. He was really a universal figure, and he had a vision not only for Lebanon, but also for all of the Arab world. There was also the Al-Hizb Al-Qawmi Suri Al-Ijtima'i, the Social Syrian National Party, who refused the isolation of Lebanon from its Levantine context and wanted a political entity to include Lebanon among Syria and Palestine and Jordan and parts of Iraq and even parts of today's Turkey. And they embraced the Palestinian cause. They embraced the Palestinian struggle, and they embraced the Palestinian right of return. So we cannot reduce the entire Lebanese political elite into xenophobic. But the tension started to boil. The seeds of tension were planted. But it's also worth mentioning that often the Palestinians in Lebanon are mentioned as a problem, as a burden on the economic and political and social system in Lebanon. But very few commentators and analysts and historians talk about the opportunities, the wealth, the boost to the Lebanese economy that the wealthy Palestinians brought in 1948. I want to quote a Lebanese writer, Talal Salman, the editor-in-chief of Al-Safir newspaper in Lebanon, who wrote Al-Filistiniyun Jawharat Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, the Palestinians, the jewel of the Middle East. And he showed us in facts, figures, numbers, names, the huge impact, the positive impact of the Palestinians on the Lebanese advancement and prosperity. And you can find this article in Arabic. And again, I'll say the title, Al-Filistiniyun Jawharat Al-Sharq Al-Awsat by Talal Salman. He said that the real prosperity of Lebanon happened only after Nakba. Beirut seaport became regional after Haifa was gone, because Haifa was the major port. Beirut airport was built after the Palestinian airport of Al-Lid was gone. There was a small, tiny airport suitable only for small aircrafts before that. Wealthy Palestinians started what later became prominent Lebanese companies, including Intra Bank, Middle East Airlines, Tehran Sharq Al-Awsat, Casino Lebanon. This is all founded by one person, Youssef Bedas. Rimon Aude, the founder of Aude Bank, and many major Lebanese companies in insurance, in agriculture, in distributing of newspapers and retail and chain of supermarkets, in furnished apartments, were all founded by Palestinians who came to Lebanon in 1948. The list is very long. The point here is often we refer to the Palestinians in Lebanon as a burden, as people at the receiving end of support, and as a problem. Problem to the international community, problem to Lebanon, and problem on everybody. However, very few wrote or spoke about the amazing impact on the Lebanese economy. So I will end with one figure. $368 million is the amount that the Palestinians in Emirate transferred to Lebanon from Emirates. The Palestinian community who have relatives in Lebanon sent in 2015 $368 million. So this is in 1 year and from one country. Now, of course, the advancement also included education, arts, culture, literature, cinema, and we can talk about that later with more details. In terms of passports, the Palestinians in 48 onwards, the first few years, very few of them was given the Lebanese citizenship, and it was as the exception. The majority, the vast majority, acquired the old Palestine government passport, which was recognized by Lebanon, recognized by Syria and the Arab countries, except Jordan and the rest of the world, basically. But in 1953-54, it had become clear that old Palestine government is fading down. There is a new reality. Return is not going to be possible sometime soon. The United Nations set up a UN body for the Palestinian refugees called the UNRWA, and then the birth of what later became the Palestinian refugee camps. Here we're talking about 24 places of Palestinian majority inside Lebanon. There are 12 recognized and 12 unofficial. So in total, there are 24 places for 24 Palestinian camps inside Lebanon. So it became clear that by mid-50s that the old Palestine government is losing its recognition and the government is fading down. They have no mandate in West Bank. Even their presence in Gaza is fading down in favor of the evolving new political regime in Egypt. So Gaza became under the custodianship of Egypt. So in mid-50s, there was an Arab League resolution that called upon the Arab countries that have Palestinian refugees not to grant them citizenship for fear of losing their political and Palestinian identity, however, and urged them to provide them with all the support they need and to provide them with means of travel. In Syria, there was a Syrian government decision to treat Palestinians on equal footings with the Syrian people on education, employment, purchasing property, equality in general. And this is the basis upon which we build our discussions when it comes to the rights granted to the Palestinian people in Syria. In Lebanon, things were a bit different. So Lebanon was more precautious when it comes to granting the Palestinians with equal rights in education and employment, and especially in property acquisition. By 1960, the old Palestine government passports became officially dead, and the Arab countries started granting the Palestinian refugees in their lands a para-passport called travel document, in Arabic wathiqa. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Egypt granted from 1960 to 63 the Palestinians in their countries the travel documents. And next week, I will talk to you more about the travel documents, wathaiq safar. Here we have four countries that granted the Palestinians travel documents. Again, I'll remind you, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Egypt. When it comes to Jordan, they became citizens of Jordan. We spoke about that. When it comes to Israel, they acquired the Israeli passports in 52, but didn't become citizens because they lived under martial law, military law, until 1966. And even after 1966, when they became citizens and they were not under military law, because the military basically was busy occupying the West Bank and the rest of the Arab territories. Even after that, they started living under fifth-class citizen. We'll talk about that later. So next week, I'll talk more about the travel documents. But before I leave you, I want to promote my concert tomorrow. This is going to be the 7th anniversary of Tarab Ensemble, the group I'm leading. And it's going to be a concert in Brunswick. Brunswick Ballroom, 7 p.m. And if you want to get the 50% discount on the ticket price from $75 to $50, write down this email address. Write down this email address. And I'll give you a few seconds to be prepared with a pen and paper and maybe on your mobile. And in the email, just say, I want the Palestine Remembered 50% discount for the concert. And I will give you the details. I will reply with the details. And the email is tarabaustralia, T-A-R-A-B, Australia, at gmail.com. That's tarabaustralia at gmail.com. That's it for this week. Tune in next week for more news, views, stories about Palestine. Until then, have a great time. and salam.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.